The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. 8 o'clock hour underway on this Wednesday, third day of August 2022. Coming up at the bottom of this hour at 8:35, Attorney General Ken Paxton will weigh in on what the state's position is on these lawless cities that are saying we're just going to turn a blind eye to abortion law violations or close to it, because they talk about decriminalization. They talk about de-emphasizing abortion enforcement. So these are little tap dances that they are doing in an attempt in the blue measles that are on Texas red state skin, the Houstons, the Dallases, the Austins, the Dentons, to say, listen, we're pretty well going to do our best to ignore post-Roe v. Wade America and try to turn a blind eye to those. And it doesn't legalize abortion in those cities, but it essentially says, and I do have a question for Attorney General Paxton and for you. What are people going to try to get away with? Are they going to try to open some shadow clinic on some, you know, dark street corner and try to get away with stuff if there's no enforcement? Maybe. So anyway, so we'll take a look at that. And in fact, Morgan Young at Channel 8 had a piece on that I'll play here in a second. But let's take care of some folks on the phone. 866-660-5759. Always a multi-topic day. We are in Granbury. Cameron. Hey, Mark Davis. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I wanted to drive 2 points home really strongly. I think we really need to not just focus that Biden's an idiot, we'll say. We all know that, and I think that lets the Democrats off easy. We need to focus that it's the Democrat policies that are creating these problems. He's only following through on those policies that they want pushed. So I think we're giving the Democrats a pass if we just blame Biden.
And then Let's do them one at a time, because that one is a stroke of genius. I hate that Biden is cognitively impaired. I don't wish that on anybody, but it's true. And your point is great, that if that's the case, then we just, you know, wish him well health-wise, and it draws attention away from how terrible the policies are. But despite his failings, despite his weaknesses, the agenda is plowing along quite strongly, and that is the real problem. The economy, borders, gun rights, transgender extremism, these things are barreling down the track, even with an impaired president, and those are the things that need attention. You're right. What's number two?
Okay, number two is it's on the flip side of that. They don't just hate Trump. They hate all of us. And it started way back with George Bush being Hitler, all these things, and they just gotten more brazen and more brazen as they go to where they're at with Trump. And so if somehow Trump didn't run and it was DeSantis, then they're going to do the same thing to him and just try to destroy him. He'll become Hitler. He'll become the worst person in the world. And, you know, they just hate us. They hate all of us who believe in America and want things to be, quote unquote, normal. And so I think those are 2 points we need to drive home is not they don't just hate Trump.
No,
it's a long line of people, and we're in it. We're in it.
Right. Because first of all, that's why they hate Trump, is his courageous, muscular, unapologetic conservatism. That's why they hate him. It's not any of the character issues or the marriage issues or the Billy Bush, you know, bus tapes. It's the conservatism. That's always been why they hated him. They will absolutely hate DeSantis if he's the nominee. They'll hate whoever the Republican nominee is. There is something about Trump that twists them off into orbit around Neptune that's a thing. I mean, there are people, but you're totally right. It's not as though some other conservative will get an easy ride from the leftist culture. You're correct.
No, but what happens is they all say, well, we'll just be nice to them and they'll like us. But that never happens.
No. When you
try to be nice to them, Lindsey Graham, I didn't mean to say that.
But, subliminal call.
You know, they use you, and then once they're through with you, then, you know, then they hate you again.
That is
they
correct.
They hate all of us. They hate us all. And we need to focus on it's a Dems policies.
That's it. Wisdom times two. Thank you, Cameron. Appreciate it. And look, that doesn't mean that your Aunt Edna, who voted for Biden, hates you because you're conservative. She might, but that doesn't necessarily. It's just structurally and institutionally, American liberalism, American leftism, fights in this just unapologetically dirty way. While we're out here talking about how bad liberal ideas are, they're out there talking about how we are either stupid or evil is the key. That if we are trying to protect the unborn, that must mean we are terrible people who hate women's rights. If we're out there saying, you know, maybe my SUV is not increasing the temperature of the planet, we are terrible, evil people who want the earth to crumble into ash. If we are saying any one of a number of conservative things, they're not out there saying we think our ideas are better and here are the reasons why your ideas are flawed. That would be an honest issue-based disagreement. No, it's that conservatives are evil or stupid or some combination thereof. So that is what our nominee will face, which, by the way, is one of the things the thing about Trump. He brought incredible energy, and that drove them crazy. DeSantis brings energy. DeSantis is whip smart, and so it'll be really hard to portray him. I mean, he doesn't have the communicative obstacles that Herschel Walker sometimes has and that everybody's trying to focus on. I don't care that Herschel Walker is not a silver-tongued orator. He's right on the issues, and that's what matters most. And there was this Elie Mystal on MSNBC the other day practicing not just racial but political bigotry in talking about Herschel as not having any independent thoughts and that this is what Republicans like from their Negroes. What? Yes, indeed. Which is an incredible insult to obviously all Republicans. That's the political bigotry. And an incredible insult to Herschel. And it's funny because I'm going to say, well, is it really racial bigotry? Because it's not like he's going after Herschel because he's black. Yes, he is. He most absolutely certainly is. This is the racism of the left. Look at what they're showing to Myra Flores down there, freshly elected in South Texas. They're going after her because she dares to be Hispanic and conservative at the same time. Herschel Walker dares to be black and conservative at the same time. And telling people of color that they can't do that, bludgeoning people of color for daring to think for themselves, that is among the worst kinds of racism. All righty. Last night, Channel 8, Morgan Young talking about this Dallas measure that, like some other Texas cities, is just going to turn a blind eye to post-Roe v. Wade America.
Well, Izzy, today the Dallas City Council's Quality of Life, Arts, and Culture Committee voted unanimously to push the GRACE Act forward.
The GRACE Act. It is an acronym for something I learned. You ready for this? Guarding the Right to Abortion Care for Everyone. Guarding the Right to Abortion Care for Everyone. Grace, the Grace Act. It's in silly me. I'm trying to get some grace shown to unborn babies. I guess grace carries different definitions.
And presented to the full council. Now, this resolution would not make abortion legal in Dallas, but it would essentially block city resources from being used to collect evidence or build a case to prosecute a doctor for performing abortions. The resolution would make investigating and prosecuting abortion cases the, quote, lowest priority for law enforcement. It would also prevent the city from keeping any data about abortions or miscarriages or using any kind of technology or surveillance to track abortions. Members of the committee called today's decision clear, obvious, and good government. Meanwhile, pro-life group Texas Right to Life calls it heartbreaking.
Protecting reproductive rights is...
right here in their difficult or unexpected pregnancies. Instead, they're trying to give abortionists a free pass.
So the committee will present the resolution to the full council on August 10th. Cities like Austin, Denton have already adopted resolutions like this one. But it is important to remember that Texas has its own abortion ban outside of the trigger law set to go into effect August 25th. That has civil penalties and is enforced by private citizens. So even if this act passes, it's likely many clinics will remain closed.
Well, of course they will, which makes me wonder how big a deal this is. It's a big deal to me because I want my legislative bodies to be law-abiding. I mean, silly me. When you take a look at what this GRACE Act, this perversely named GRACE Act does, it delivers the lowest priority for law enforcement and city resources in enforcing laws against abortion. It calls for no data to be gathered on abortions for investigation purposes and no technology or surveillance to track abortions for investigation or prosecution. It is the city of Dallas turning a blind eye to a crime. I'm sure they're so proud, so very, very proud. Oh, and make no mistake, this thing will pass because it's Dallas. And you can change that if you want to. It's called Elect Better People. 821, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Ring a bell? Here's a clue. This recording is about 53 years old. It's Jimmy Page. Yeah. Nestled among Communication Breakdown and I Can't Quit You Baby and Good Times, Bad Times. It's from the very first Led Zeppelin album, Black Mountainside. A little acoustic action from Jimmy. Always had a kind of an Eastern flavor to his acoustic stuff. 866-660-5759. Attorney General Ken Paxton in about 9 or 10 minutes. Right now, we're in Glen Rose. Mary, Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
Hi. Hello. How are you?
I am great. Thanks.
Good. Hey, I have an example as to it doesn't matter who they nominate as the Republican Party. It's what they did to the Tea Party. There was no head of that Tea Party. But they basically, the mainstream press, canceled the Tea Party. They made fun of it. They ripped it to shreds. And it was all, there was no head to take off. They just tore the party apart.
Okay, a couple of questions. So for Tea Party memories, we go back to April of 2009, and I remember being at Dallas City Hall, like emceeing the first Tea Party gathering, and it gathered incredible steam and had enormously wide support. And you're right, the media tore it apart. The Tea Party movement was racist. It was terrible. They were awful people. But all that happened thereafter is a momentum of the Tea Party movement that was so vast and so powerful that it eventually became the most powerful arm of the Republican Party. The Tea Party movement is what ultimately gave birth to Trump. So the notion that the media successfully or the left somehow successfully took action against the Tea Party, boy, I don't think so.
Well, I guess I didn't realize that because it just seemed like the Tea Party... Anytime anybody brought up the Tea Party, it turned into a dirty joke.
Well, you're watching too much late night TV. But I'll tell you, here's something that's interesting, and I'm glad you brought it up because there's some folks who noticed maybe circa 2012, 2013, sort of in the middle of the Obama nightmare. Maybe you didn't hear Tea Party references that much. You didn't hear a lot of reference to Tea Party Republicans or the Tea Party movement after about 4 or 5 years. The reason for that is that it was so incredibly popular that so much of the Republican Party, bold conservative leaders, adopted it as the default setting. It wasn't like a distinction that you drew very much anymore. Somebody once said, if the Tea Party is not important, why is Mitch McConnell walking around CPAC with a musket? It was so popular, in fact, and adopted so broadly and championed so popularly by so many Republicans that it's like, well, I guess that's just what the boldest part of conservatism is now. That's what the most courageous Republicans do now. So the greatest compliment to the Tea Party influence is it became what wound up in counting back about 10 years now, the tip of the spear for real conservative Republicans who are currently running the show. We ran the show during Trump and we're going to run the show again. Mary, God bless. Thank you very, very much. Let's hop into the newsroom. It's 8:30. See what's going on with Gordon Griffin. And then we'll see what's going on with Attorney General Ken Paxton. We'll talk about a couple of things. Obviously, we'll talk about borders. Obviously, we'll talk about various things going on in his office in terms of stuff he's doing with regard to doing a daily battle with the Biden administration. But also, what do you do? You know, how do you solve a problem like it's almost a musical, like Dallas, Denton, El Paso, Austin, who are simply going to turn a blind eye to enforcing abortion laws in post-Roe v. Wade, Texas. We'll ask him next. Right now, Mark Davis, 8:30. Here's Gordon Griffin. All right. It is 8:36. On a Wednesday morning, third day of August. Just a little over 3 months. Which is not a long time to the actual November election. All kinds of things on the ballot nationally. We were talking about the various states that had primaries yesterday, looking for 2 weeks from this morning when we can celebrate the defeat of Liz Cheney, God willing, out there in Wyoming. And here in Texas, here on the off years, we have big time elections for things like, ooh, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. So all of those are in progress. Let's check into the AG race. With the AG, Attorney General Ken Paxton is with us. Morning, sir. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Sitting down here on the border with some great people.
Shocker, shocker. You never get out of the border anymore.
I know, right?
Well, it is a good place to be because there are two kinds of folks, people who have been there and people who have not, and another two kinds, people who are serious about the border and people who are not. I want to talk about some of these scofflaw cities turning a blind eye to the new rules of the road on abortion, but when we talk about the border, I watched Governor Abbott last night, I think, on Hannity, saying, hey, I think we got some more busloads going to D.C., and he's invited the mayors of Eric Adams in New York and Muriel Bowser in D.C. To come down and look at the border. I don't think they'll be doing that, because if they did, what would they see?
They would see disaster, and the complaint that they have is that they can't handle the 4,000 that are in D.C. or the 2,800 that are in New York, and the numbers that we have are obviously multiples of that by, hundreds. And we get that many almost every day that they're complaining they're having trouble dealing with. And so it would be very, very eye-opening to them to see what we have to deal with, including, the drugs, the human trafficking, just the overwhelming nature of what we have to deal with on a daily basis.
When Governor Abbott started sending the busloads to D.C., there was an interesting mixed reaction. There are people who thought, great, if Biden won't come to the border, we're bringing the border to Biden. Couple of people called me, maybe more than a couple, and said, wait a minute, doesn't this kind of weave busloads of illegals deeper into the interior of America? And do we really want that? And my thought at the time was, even though it's some busloads, it's a pretty tiny fraction. And I think it's worth the, pardon the term here, political theater to sort of make the point. So, I mean, I don't know. Where do you come down on that?
No, I agree with that. I think it's worth making the point. It's a tiny fraction. I calculated the percentage. D.C. is getting 0.1% of what we're getting. So, infinitesimal, really. It's like I told people, it's like a drop in the ocean for what we're having to deal with every single day. But I do think it's worth them having to experience just a tiny fraction of what we do, so that it makes it much harder for them to come out and criticize us, even though they're still doing it. And it gives them a reality check on what we're actually dealing with.
There was a golden moment where D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said, hey, we need some National Guard help with this influx of illegals. Said, really, ma'am? Really? Hold our beer. Let's show you a little something about needing help. So every once in a while, it's a good idea to just ask, what do we want? Because we do a lot of complaining, and rightfully so. Biden's not enforcing the border. The border's a disaster. Open borders, waves of illegals. So if we started to get what we – obviously, nationally, we'd have a president who is serious about the borders, but we're not going to have that for at least some number of years. So what – after you win, Abbott wins, Dan Patrick wins, what are you guys going to do? What can our state do against this tide of national inattention to the border?
Well, you're asking a really great question, a really hard question. The reason it's hard is because we've never had an administration that basically has a cooperative arrangement with the cartels. We're talking about organized crime. We're talking about criminal activity. And the Biden administration is working hand in hand with the cartels, because what they've said is bring as many people as possible. Don't limit yourself. Expand your network. Make billions of dollars, both on drugs and on trafficking. Bring them to us. Don't run from us. Please come in, claim asylum, bring them to our people, and we'll take the handoff and we'll take them to states that we want to put them in. So this is a deal. It's not written in a contract, but it's basically an oral contract with the cartels to do as much immigration, illegal immigration, and human trafficking and drug trafficking as possible. That's the reality of what the Biden administration is doing. So it's really challenging, because what do you do? How do you fight the federal government when they are participating in illegal activities with the cartels? It becomes a real challenge for the governor, for lieutenant governor, for me. But we're going to go fight them in court. We're going to do the things that Abbott's doing, like busing, trying to put our own people along the border and arresting them for trespass. We're doing what we can, and we are catching people. We are stopping some drugs. And I figure everything that we do saves lives.
Attorney General Ken Paxton is here, and our conversations these days take place in post-Roe v. Wade America, post-Roe v. Wade Texas. Thank you, God. And we live in a state that is going to be serious about protecting the unborn. Kansas, last night, showing itself not as serious. What do you know about that? That was a constitutional amendment they had the opportunity to remove. I would think a pretty pro-life state like Kansas went like 60-40 and said, nope, we're going to keep some level of abortion rights protection.
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised at that. I don't know the voters of Kansas very well. I'm kind of surprised, because it seems like a pretty Midwestern state that would care about the issue of life. So I don't really know. I don't know how it got advertised. I don't know how it got presented. I don't know if, you know, our side did a good job presenting the arguments. I don't know enough about Kansas to say what happened there, but I am surprised.
Yeah, me too. And now here in Texas, we obviously have a decidedly pro-life state. I think the November election results will show that. But we have pockets of blue politics in our larger cities where interesting things are happening. A fairly perversely titled thing called the Grace Act, guarding the right to abortion care everywhere, voof, from Austin to Denton and now Dallas. Dallas City Council examining a measure that can't make abortion legal. They can't completely flout the law. But what they seek to do is say, we're just not going to pay any law enforcement attention to this. No resources to track it. No investigative resources to see if these laws are being broken. Can they do that?
So, you know, it's pretty frustrating to see leaders of a large city basically look at elected representative laws that were passed by the elected representative of our state and say, look, we're not following what democracy says we should follow. We're going to make our own rules. This little group of people in Dallas are going to control something that they don't really have the right to control. So it's pretty frustrating to watch, but it is, the law is set up where local DAs have the ability to enforce this, and the legislature set it up that way. And they're going to have to address this, because a lot of these local DAs are not going to follow the law. They are going to make their own decisions about what they want the law to be. And this is one of the problems we have in Texas. The DAs have tremendous power to control what the law is, and particularly in these very liberal cities that have Soros-funded DAs. And that is a reality. George Soros has figured this out. I'm not sure that we've figured it out in the Republican Party, but the local DAs are very powerful and can just decide, oh, I'm not going to enforce that law. And Dallas is a perfect example of that. not just on abortion, but on other crimes as well.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, we pay attention to president and governor and attorney general and all kinds of other stuff that's very in the headlines every day. And sometimes we get asleep at the switch at district attorney, which is enormously important. And Mr. Soros wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed just the other day essentially saying, hey, here's why I support all these, you know, what he calls reform-minded district attorneys. And that's the answer I've been given too, is that we may not like it, and the law is what it is, but individual jurors.
We could fix it, Mark, we could fix it. The legislature could change it. In many states, the attorney general has concurrent jurisdiction. So if the legislature had a desire to make that actually work, they would pass the law and let my office prosecute abortion. And they could do that with a, you know, passing the legislation. Now, we still have to deal with the Criminal Court of Appeals that has said that I'm in the executive branch and I don't have the right to go to court anymore. At all, which makes no sense. But the reality is we could fix it in the next legislation if the legislature wanted to fix it.
Well, that's a famous theme of mine of, as far as learning what the legislature really does and really does not want to do. And we do as people and as legislative bodies, if we really want to do something, we do it. So let me dig down on that a second. So right now, individual district attorneys have the latitude to pay a lot of attention to some laws and little or no attention to others. That's latitude they get. What is the difference that you describe, having you actually prosecute it? Does that take us back into the difference between having it a Mississippi-style law that says you can't do this versus the civil actions trigger law thing that we have?
No. So, and it's not really latitude they have. They're supposed to under the law. But we have, you know, this is post-Obama. You know, this is the attitude of many Democrats, many liberal politicians. I don't have to follow laws. I make my own laws. And the DAs have come up with this idea that I know what the legislature's passed, but I'm the guy that gets to decide whether that law goes into effect. And they're not supposed to do that. And what I'm saying is there's a solution. The solution is pretty simple. Give the attorney general, because then you have a balance, a check on the power of the DAs. Because right now the power of the DA is they can override the legislature, which is not the way the Constitution is supposed to work. But they're overriding the Constitution. They're overriding the legislature. The legislature has an easy fix. They just have never had the desire to fix it.
All right. In our final couple of minutes, let's talk about the adventures of the home stretch of the election season. What is up with you and the State Bar Association? I know they don't like you. I think the State Bar Association, they lead left. And so what'd you do the other day? Did you say essentially nobody in your office can even go speak at any events organized by the State Bar? How's that going to work out?
Well, so look, they're doing this across the country. They're going after Republican AGs for fighting election fraud because they're saying that's a violation of our legal obligations. First of all, you know, why should the State Bar be able to step into my office and tell me as a constitutional officer elected by the people, and the people can make their own decisions. They don't like what I'm doing. They vote for me. They don't vote for me. But this bar situation where they come in and try to tell me how to operate, what cases I can file, and then tell me if I file the wrong cases that I could lose my license. If that happens, then we might as well just say the State Bar controls the AG's office because, you know, I can no longer make decisions about cases. I have to go ask them for permission and forget the voters. These liberal lawyers at the bar are trying to affect, and they're doing this across the country. This is a strategy probably designed by George Soros himself to prevent Republican AGs from doing their jobs and implementing the law that has been put in place by the legislature.
And last thing, back to borders. There's a lot of hang up over a word as to whether our incursions at the border, the waves of illegals, that's obvious, whether they are or are not an invasion. How has that become an issue here in the summer of 22?
Well, look, I think people are frustrated. They have every right to be frustrated because the federal government's not following the law. There's clearly, I mean, just by definition, there's an invasion. The question is, what does that mean under the Constitution? What does that mean? First of all, you know, who gets to declare that? It's not clear who declares that. Is it the governor? Who declares that? The only logical person would be the governor. But what does that then mean when the federal government's participating in inviting the invasion, working hand in hand purposely with the cartels? Because this isn't like the old days where people could try to sneak past Border Patrol. This is like the Border Patrol is sitting there waiting for them, and they are brought to Border Patrol on purpose. How would how would declaring an invasion fix that? Because you would have to fight the federal government, right? You would have to have some kind of war with the federal government to overcome that. That's the frustration, is we've got a federal government that is violating federal law, harming the American people on purpose, ignoring the Constitution, and leaving us in a terrible position of having to suffer the consequences of their violations of law.
So as we take a look, I mean, obviously the primaries are past us, and now it's time to take on an actual Democrat. Is there going to be debates? I mean, how does that even work? And, you know, what are we looking at? Rochelle Garza? I don't know her, haven't met her. How does this actual mano a mano battle shape up?
Look, my goal is that she's a pretty left leaning AOC type candidate. She sued us. I have had to deal with lawsuits where she sued us, trying to get us to pay for abortions for illegal immigrants. This is the type of person that we're dealing with. I'm just going to continue to do my job, talk about what I'm doing, probably not focus too much on what she's done, because, I mean, that's the type of thing she's done. We'll probably talk about some of those, but in the end, I just want to keep giving the voters an opportunity to know that I'm out there, what I'm out there doing. And if they like it, hopefully, you know, I'll end up reelected.
Well, we'll ask you questions about all the above and whatever conversations we have in the coming months. It's starting to get fun. I mean, it's always been fun after a fashion. Politics is quite the sport, and we always appreciate the visits. Attorney General Ken Paxton, thanks so much.
All right. You have a great day.
That I will. 8:51, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. You're a free girl now. Free girls, free boys, free men and women, free people of all ages and stripes. Glad you are here. All right, so there was Attorney General Ken Paxton. I get the occasional phone call, the occasional text, the occasional Facebook post saying, hey, Mark, I hear you talk with confidence all the time about Texas remaining red. You know, is Abbott going to win? Is Patrick going to win? Is Paxton going to win? Let me have a thought or two about some of these November elections in Texas in the 9 o'clock hour and a number of other things that I haven't even gotten to yet. A number of things happening in the news, a lot of stuff since we last spoke, things haven't even brought up yet. So let's get right to it. And you can bring stuff up too at 866-660-5759. 866-660-5759. 2 hours down, one to go. What will we do with it? It's up to us. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.